Good morning. Oh my God, you guys, you look fabulous. I want to welcome everyone here and of course our supporters, members out in Cyber Spirit. Welcome. We are the Center for Spiritual Living, and we are here I guess it's me. We are here to make certain that you are here. You are here to make certain we are here. So this has been an awesome opportunity, an awesome journey, an awesome experience. We continue to do what is asked of us, and you guys, please continue to support us. It is the way we make it work. And I can say, so far, so good. I want to read to you our vision statement here at CSL Midtown. We are a strong, open, globally connected community centered on the clarity of principle through teaching, service, and practice. We create a safe and respectful environment that supports healthy spiritual growth. And again, as we all know, the pandemic came, and there were so many that did not make it to the other side. So I want you to just consider how we have been able to do so. And we, guys, we are still here. So That is quite the accomplishment. Today we have a special guest. I say special guest, but he's almost like ours. Well, we do claim him. He is ours, Reverend Dr. John Korn. He's going to give us a special message today. I am a child of God. Just the I am. I'm listening for that message, Dr. John. Certainly looking forward to hearing all the information around that. So here at this point, we have our Declaration of Principle. So excited to have this. We have this on the screen and just...
I believe.
I believe.
I believe in one God.
One absolute power and first cause to all things.
I believe that this power is perfect love.
And creates out of a desire to express love.
I believe all thought is creative, and how I choose to think creates my personal experience.
I believe in the unity of all life.
And the immortality of the individual soul.
Forever unfolding.
I believe in the eternal goodness.
The eternal goodness of God.
The eternal loving kindness.
And the eternal givingness of God to all.
And so it is.
And so it is.
And so it is.
So we are a teaching philosophy, and we have classes for our practitioners to continue their education. And of course, you get better. Today, I am your practitioner. I am Barbara Guillory, and I have been in the teaching a very, very long time. I just also want to share with you guys, the practitioners are very active in the leadership, in the development, and work with the board here. So the board and the practitioners, they continue to move forward, making certain we remain. Happy 14th year. We're going into our 14th year, guys. We made 13 just last month. So we're on our 14th year. Great, great, great progress, accomplishments there. So the message today is, I am. I am. I am. So when I initially came to this teaching, taking the classes with the signs of mind, I am was one of those lessons that was very different for me, coming from my Catholic teaching. The I am is a very powerful tool, but at the time I was not aware of my use of the I am. Before coming here, the I am was, I am sad. I am frustrated. I am angry. I am broke. It's these things that we were just not really conscious of. And of course, at the same time, throughout our lives, we are creating our identity with the tool I am. The I am is an indicator on the conditioning of our minds. So we want to be very conscious. We want to be aware. We want to make certain that when we are using the I am, two small words, but very powerful, that we are creating an identity that says, I am love. I am light. I am good. I am spirit. These are all the true identity of who we truly are. Beyond the external, there's an internal. The I am, we can create bandages for ourselves and not really realize it. I am a victim. It's a bondage statement. But then we turn around and we blame somebody else. Why? Because that is the conditioning. And until you are made aware of that thought that is taking place in our minds, we have no idea what it is that we are doing to ourselves. The other teaching here is that if you see the problem, you own it. It belongs to you. That was new, again, for me. But again, understanding the I am helped me to become more aware of what I was internalizing. So the I am is what we feel. The I am is the thought, and beyond the thought is the feeling. So the I am can be used to create an identity that is healthy. The I am can be used to create an identity that is unhealthy. You get to choose. You get to choose. So understand the I am and the power behind I am and the choice that you make. So I'm going to do a treatment now for peace. And as we always say, it is just the one. And I will be doing this in the first person, so you get to do it in the first person as well. Why? Because we are all one. So what resonates with you, you will know again from the I am that you have created for yourself. So as we center ourselves, we come to know and understand there is just the one universe from which all things are made. It is out of this oneness I am connected, I am created, I am one. It is this beautiful knowledge of this oneness that lets me know I am. I am. I am. It is the demonstration of peace here that says to me, I am peace. I am joy. I am love. I am light. I am healing. I am spirit. I am. I am. I am. For this wonderful, beautiful knowledge and the working of the universe, I am grateful. And for this, I say thank you. And so it is. So our message today will come through none other than Reverend Dr. John Corn. He is a licensed and ordained minister since 2015 with a doctorate of divinity and a doctorate in religious studies. He's a certified hospice chaplain and religious science practitioner as well. He's been with the faculty of the Emerson Theological Institute since 2014 and the Dean of Students since 2023. Besides teaching, his passion is to serve the disenfranchised. He serves on the Emerson Theological Institute Board of Directors and the affiliate New Thought Network Board of Directors. So I present to you guys, and please help me welcome Reverend Dr. John Corn.
All righty, good morning. I'm so happy to be here with everyone. And I'm also saying good morning to the people online. That's how I normally watch the services, either on YouTube or Facebook. Or Zoom. Next week, a friend of mine is going to be speaking here, and so I promised her I'd be there on Zoom. I'm hoping she'll be able to see me for that. Her name is Janine Burns. So the topic today is, I am a child of God, and so are you. But when no one's looking, that's kind of a lot to take in, especially the first time you hear it. So if no one's looking, I might ask myself, am I really a child of God? The old man in the sky. Was I created in his image? What about when I do something sneaky? Is he watching me and taking notes like Santa Claus? Did anyone notice I kept saying he? Is God a white, heterosexual, Christian, cisgendered male? Does he vote Republican versus Democrat? My mother's pretty sure he votes Democrat like her. And she'll call me up and tell me, you know, God's not going to let that happen. I'm just like, it just might, honey. And what about women? When we're talking about a child of God made in his image, what about the women in our world? What about the disenfranchised people of multiple communities? Are they left out on purpose? I know they feel left out. When I was a child, we went to a church that was based on a style of teaching with us and God out there. And so we sometimes refer that to that as duality. And they could never answer my questions. They had within their doctrine that if you didn't believe the exact same they believed, that you would go to hell. And I would ask, you know, them and my parents when I got home about it again because it never made sense to me. We had Jewish people in our family. We had Catholic neighbors. I used to go to church with them as well. And these were all really good people. And that's where, for me, a lot of challenges come in. But you know, as New Thought people, we honor every path to God, no matter what it is. Emerson wrote a little funny bit in his essay on compensation. He went to a church service where the preacher was a man that was well esteemed for his orthodoxy. The preacher assumed that judgment is not executed in this world during our physical lifetime, that the wicked will be successful, the good will be miserable, and then urged from reason and from scripture that compensation to both parties would be in the next life. And he said he found that odd that no offense appeared to be taken by the congregation at this doctrine. And when it was over, the congregation left without even a remark on the sermon. And he just thought that was so odd. He said that the fallacy with that teaching is that justice is not done now, according to them. Cause and effect is how we would explain the world and justice, things happening to us based on what we've put into law. What did the preacher mean when he said, those that do good are rewarded in the next life, and those that are not good, the rich people, have temporary reward now? My teacher said, when I took this class the first time, that that is a mindset of paying for a new car now and not driving it until after you die. So that never added up for me. I loved Emerson, though. The more time I've had to study him, the better and better it gets. And I'll tell you, when we went through our classes, we just studied it the one time in the second year of study, and I got to study it three times on my way to ministerial. So every time it gets easier, then over time you're looking things up just to find a funny quote. So I came from that background, that duality background, and I knew that I wasn't welcome as a gay man, that, you know, I'm an abomination. So for me, I left that teaching and found my way over to oneness teachings. And everything evolved for me at that point, up until so to a level that I had to go to a accreditation conference for the Emerson Institute about a week ago. And the people at that conference are deans or presidents of religious schools. So the Unity people were there, the Johnny Coleman people were there, we were there on behalf of Emerson, and then a lot of people from all kinds of different teachings. A lot of the duality type teachings were there. And so they would get up one after another and share their doctrine because, you know, it's their doctrine. They love this stuff. And the oneness people were on the other side saying, should we leave? Should we just get up and take our stuff and leave? And for me, what I got out of it was, these are smart people. These are not people having a challenge. This is simply what they believe. And since it's their doctrine, they want to share it. So the New Thoughters and myself, would, after each speaker, we would talk about what we got out of that talk. What was good? What are we taking with us? And that was our way of making it through the week. And what was really wonderful about them was, even when we went to the airport, they stuck with me and they surrounded me and they did not leave me unattended. I guess they were just naturally protective of me. It was my first time doing that. And I feel like I have a whole new family. Even with the Pentecostal ministers, everyone was wonderful. All right, and in religious science, the oneness teachings, we're taught early that every aspect of ourself is created by God, out of God. And it's out of this substance. Maya likes to talk about the substance that is all around us, and it is what everything is created out of. And it's intelligent substance. That's the piece I wanted to add to that. It means from the top of our heads all the way down to our tippy-tippy toes, we are created. All of that is the substance of God. And what do we know about substance? In today's vernacular, we are more and more referring to this as the quantum field. Substance was a word back in the early 20th century that our teachers used. This substance can be molded, shaped, or manifested into something else. So we can have a perfect body when we come in, or a body that needs to be healed. And when we come in, depending on the consciousness during that pregnancy, we can also cause it to be changed in some way so that the body is reflecting the health healthiness of our thoughts. In A Course in Miracles, I found that their doctrine complements religious science doctrine quite well. They're both oneness teachings. And in A Course in Miracles, the belief is that anything that can be changed, like our bodies, is temporary. It's not permanent. It's not going with us later. The part of us that is spirit is permanent. Whatever God is permanent. How that substance works is permanent. You can't change it. And so knowing that, you have this liberation of, oh, okay, what can I work on? I'll let that stuff be to the side. I'm not going to pray to God. I'm not going to plead and beseech. I'm going to line myself up within consciously with that we call God. And from there, I can move forward. As a child, Myrtle Fillmore of Unity had tuberculosis and always thought of herself as a sickly child. And what happens when you think you're a sickly child? Yeah, you get more evidence. Oh, yes, I am a sickly child. Look what just happened to me. Right. And you own it, right? And then the universe keeps producing it for you so you can keep pointing out, look how sickly I am. The turning point for Myrtle Fillmore was when she went to see E.B. Weeks speak from Hopkins, Illinois' Metaphysical Institute, and she had an aha moment. It was during this talk that, number one, she heard she, as a woman, was made in the likeness and image of God. And number two, there's not a divine will that she be sick. And that, I think, is important for us to remember. There is not a divine will for any of us to be sick. There's no divine will for me to be poor. There's no divine will for me to struggle or for love in my world. And yes, God within me seeks an outlet for its creativity, and I've been blocking it for some time. There's only ourselves holding ourselves back. God is ready to go. Myrtle's affirmation became, I am a child of God, and therefore I do not inherit sickness. And that's affirmation stuck with her, and people started to come to see her because she was healed. She taught them how to visualize and how to use affirmations. She prayed with them and introduced them to New Thought teachings. Another wonderful Unity minister was Eric Butterworth. He had a belief or a talk about letting go of old benefits, old beliefs, and the grace of poverty and the subconscious sense of guilt in having things, along with feelings of unworthiness. And you might not have had that feeling about the grace of poverty coming up. I think it's a little bit before our generation that this language was used, but that blew me away. Subconscious guilt in having things, yes, I think we've had that. You might have been taught these things as a child. These attitudes have a detrimental influence on our lives. You're to claim your entitlement. Know that it is yours, and you have to claim it to own it. I was reading All That the Father Has Is Mine from Living the Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes. And he also said you have to claim it. And you know, it's not socially correct for us to say, that's mine, I'll want it, I'll take it right now. Right? We kind of like want to creep back from that and be polite. Well, maybe just a little in a low voice. But all these teachers, Ernest Holmes, Eric Butterworth, the Fillmores, all of them taught that you have to claim it. And my teacher would say, well, it's not socially correct, but it's spiritually correct. So there are going to be times that you're being spiritually correct, and you might put off somebody, but that's okay. The area, or one of the areas I found that was most rewarding for me as a minister, was working with the disenfranchised. I tried working with the LGBTQ in prison, and the prison becomes an impossible system to work in. They will not let you hug anybody. You can't touch anybody. And you have to keep your mouth shut when the guards or other people in the prison are making the prisoner's life miserable. Part of their goal is, you know, to make it so bad they don't want to come back. But I told them I can't do my work if I can't hug and love, you know, and touch them in some way, even if it's during prayer. I ended up running a homeless kitchen instead for about 4 to 5 years. And this was indeed the best work I've ever had. The homeless tend to think they're castaways already. In fact, the longer they are homeless, the longer they are permanent castaways. They will get run over by cars. One guy got run over twice. And they would come to us, and I had a room full of medical stuff that I could use on them. I'm also an RN, if you don't know. And also, I had the resources to set them up with Social Security. We would make the appointment, and they would go down there, and they wouldn't allow him in, wouldn't allow our homeless guy inside. I also worked with one wonderful woman who's probably in her early 30s and homeless, and she kept winning the lottery. She couldn't stop winning the lottery, no matter what she did. So her mindset was, I always win the lottery. Big deal. It's not a big deal. I win it every other day. So why is she homeless, you might ask? I worked with her when she won the lottery last time about keeping some of it for yourself. Why not keep half of it for yourself? And she kept saying, yeah, I'll keep some for myself. But she was giving it to other homeless people on the street, just trying to lift them up. In the end, she gave it all away. Like, I'd check with her each week. Have you given it all away? No. Finally, she gave it all away. It's because she didn't have the consciousness to keep it, right? That's what we would teach here. Another gentleman I worked with there thought he was an angel and said it's his job to uplift the people on the street and help them out. And since he said, at some point, he said they are children of God, I was able to say, but are you helping all the children of God? Are you including yourself? You're a child of God. Are you helping yourself? And I think that really threw him off. He left that day, and God only knows what he did. I also wondered, geez, maybe he is an angel. I don't know. We teach angels are thoughts, intuition. They're messengers. That's what we teach in this teaching. But I thought, there's always a chance. You never know. Edwin Gaines said that in the four spiritual laws of prosperity on page 25, that God is rich and nothing is too good for the children of God. The Spirit of the Infinite will provide the bare necessities, not the bare necessities, but everything. And again, you have to claim it. We set our consciousness to receive this good so that if we do get some good in the interim, it won't disappear. So I'm always reading that you have to create space for your manifestation to take place. So when I'm working on finance, I reference my bank accounts and the different funds I have. And I note that this money is going to go, you know, into all these different ways of distribution. So am I a child of God? And are you? We are all worthy of not some of the good, but all of the good. And what about when I do something sneaky? Is it watching me and keeping notes like Santa? When I misuse my life, am I punished beyond the effects of cause and effect? One of the benefits of this teaching is that if you are determined and apply it to everyday life, you will get older, as is inevitable, but you'll also get wiser. At this point, my manifestations happen really fast. I'm so grateful for that. But I also have, on the flip side, instant karma. If I lower myself, I'm embarrassed to even share with you in the ways. I haven't done this now in several years, but I used to throw my gum, chewing gum, out the window of the car while I was driving. And so as soon as I would get where I was going, I would be walking in. Guess what? I stepped in gum every single time. Every single time, I promise you. And that's why I've not done it in a long time. But I do have instant karma, and I bet some of you do as well. Mm-hmm. So I've got a reading for you from the Christian Larson book, The Pathway of Roses. Okay. I feel like something was missing. There was, and do you know Christian Larson was one of the teachers around 1920? I don't know if you know of her, but one of the people that wrote a lot of books, and you can get them now, you know, as ebooks for free online. There was a boy whose father left him and his mother and was never involved again. When the boy was about 12 years old, a new preacher came to his church. The little boy would always go in late and slip out early to avoid hearing the question, "Who is your father?" But one day, the new preacher said the benediction so fast that the little boy got caught and couldn't walk out to the crowd. So just as he was getting to the back door, the new preacher, not knowing anything about him, put his hand on his shoulder and asked, "Son, who is your father?" The congregation got deathly quiet at that point, and he could feel every eye in the church looking at him. Now everyone would finally know the answer to the question, "Who's your father?" This new preacher, though, sensed that the situation around him was changing, and he tapped into his intuition and said to that scared little boy, "Oh, wait a minute, I know who you are. I see the family resemblance now." And with that, he patted the boy on his shoulder and said, "Boy, you've got a great inheritance. Go and claim it, because you are a child of God." With that, the boy smiled for the first time in a long time and walked out the door a changed person. He was never the same again. And from then on, whenever anyone asked him, "Who's your father?" he would tell them, "I am a child of God." And my friends, so are you, and so is it. So is it, so it is. Thank you. Let's welcome Vance up so he can. Oh, thank you. I'll clap in advance.
Thank you, John. What an awesome talk. That we are.
Thank you.
We are all children of God, and that's a good reminder of that. So with that, it's my part of the service to do our affirmation of prosperity. So we'll put this up on the screen. You can donate online at cslmidtown.org/donate. Scan the QR code, and there are envelopes and a basket here in the room if you're here in the room. So if you would, say with me our affirmation of prosperity. I live in a universe of abundance. As I freely and joyfully give, I join in the divine flow, and all that I share with life returns to me, multiplied abundantly. And so it is. And now I'm going to turn it over to our board president, Lee Huffman.
Thank you, Vance. Thank you very much, John. That was an amazing talk today. And Barbara, for making things run so smoothly here, I appreciate it. And for everybody that's here, it's good to see you all. You know, Vance and Diego and actually Connie and others really make this service run. And so I appreciate everything they do. Diego, you don't see because he's behind the scenes, and his team out in Oregon make all this work for us online. So that's all good. I want to thank the transition team and the practitioners and the board. We have decided that we need to move ahead with starting the process of finding a new minister, because that process is about 18 months long by the time we do everything. So we are looking for people to become part of the selection team. And the characteristics that we need to have are people that are solid in science of mind. And that can be, you've gone through the foundations class, you've been involved with the center. Also that you have been involved in the center. So you're a member here. And so that's who we're looking for. And we need about a mixture of practitioners, board members, and non-practitioner board members as well. And so we'll have seven people on that team. And if you want more information, send me a message at president@cslmidtown.org, and I'll get back to you and get you more information on that. But we would really like to have people apply this month and next month, and then we're going to start doing some work there of making sure that we're all on the same page as to what we're looking for in a minister, and then putting a call out to find ministers. And it really does take quite a bit of time. There are 14 centers right now that are in the process of looking for ministers. And there are some ministers that are floating around. So they're out there. So good stuff. So coming up next week from 10 o'clock to 10:45, or 10:50, I'm sorry, 10 o'clock to 10:50, the adult study group is online. So you can get to that through Zoom. And the way to get to that is to go to the cslmidtown.org site. Scroll down, you'll see the word Zoom. Make a note on the number there. There's just a code to get in, and then click on that, bring it up live. And it's a great discussion with practitioners that are on there and other members, with a good discussion that is just something that will seep you deeper into science of mind. So appreciate the people that run that. You can also, the celebration service next week will be online. So you can do that through Zoom or Facebook. And so you know how to get to that. And that's from 11 to 12 every Sunday. So you can also help us by praying for the center, doing treatments. We have, it's very important that we find the right minister to lead this group. And we are going to move forward with a lot of good things there. Also participate in the services. And as Vance said, to donate. So those are the key points for tonight, today. And I want to just thank everybody for coming out and for watching us online and for enjoying these talks that the transition team is bringing. That's a great job of great speakers. So thank you all for coming. And we will go out with the exit. Yes, affirmation of life. I just drew a blank. I leave this place now knowing something better than I knew before. I go forth in the world with a heart full of love and a mind full of good sense. I look at the world in a greater way, knowing that I have within me everything I need to create the life I desire. I give thanks for this understanding, and I am grateful for the spirit of life that lives through me. And so it is. Thank you all.